All right.
Well, we're back.
We're back with part number two with Mr. Walter Trout. And Mr. Walter Trout is going to take the United States by storm. I understand you've got some big touring you're going to be doing over here.
I've got some great gigs coming up this summer, yeah.
Yeah. Can you let us know where they are?
A lot of big festivals. Some of the ones I know about are the Memphis in May Festival that they have right on Beale Street the first week of May.
That's going to be fun.
I can't remember them all.
Tampa
Bay Blues Festival at the end of March. I'm going to play there right before Susan Tedeschi.
It's about time the United States got to see more of you, because I know that in England you are considered a blues master. The Time Out in London calls you the gladiator guitar player. You've been ranked number 6 among the top 20 all-time greatest guitarists in the European 1993 BBC England guitar poll. You were just 2 votes behind number 5, who happened to be Jimmy Page. So, I mean, I know a lot of people in America know something about you, but now we get a chance to see you performing, and that's
absolutely
great.
You know, I do have to say, I was in England making a record when they announced the results of that poll.
Yeah.
And if I'd have known what the results were going to be, I'd have sent in 3 votes for myself and come in number 5.
There you go. And had Jimmy Page behind you.
Yeah, that's right.
Can we twist your arm into doing something live for us?
Oh, that'd be marvelous.
Don't twist my arm.
You got to play with it.
With the Stephen Stills
tuning. Since we're in the Stephen Stills strange tuning here, right. I'll see what we can do. The highway, and I don't know where I'm going. I said I'm moving down the highway, and Lord, I don't know where I'm going. So I wake up with the feeling that it's time I'm moving on. Many turns that I did not foresee. I said the road has taken many turns that I did not foresee. Lord, I get to thinking, Lord, what will come of me?
It doesn't get any better than that. That's spectacular, Walter.
Damn.
And you know, just a postscript to that, I'd like to say. See, that is the
tune.
I'm not kidding.
No kidding. That does sound a little bit like Stephen when you put it like that.
Yeah. Oh, man. What was the name of that?
Time for Moving On.
Time for Moving On. That's for David's benefit.
That's actually on that dreaded Silvertone album.
Oh, my God.
Well, now, even though you had a bad time with Silvertone, are you happy with the album?
You know, I actually am. I'm happy with the music, the songs, and the playing of the band. I'm not too happy with the recording.
Mm.
I listened to it, and I think that sonically that album could have come out much better.
You didn't record that at Soundcastle, did you?
No, I did that at Battery Studios in London, and that had the largest budget of any record I've ever done.
Oh, wow. And you're not happy with it sonically?
Not sonically, no.
Uh-huh. How many albums have you done?
Nine.
Nine. How many, and which of those nine would you consider, let's say pick two of your very personal favorites?
You know, I always seem to like the most current ones.
Everybody does. Everybody does.
Although I have an album that I did in 1990 when I was in the process of meeting Marie in Denmark. I recorded it in Copenhagen.
Is that where you guys met?
We
in
met
Denmark?
In Denmark, yeah. And it's the album's called Prisoner of a Dream, and the Los Angeles Times in Orange County, when they did their roundup of the 90s, and the 10 best albums of the 90s, they had it at number 7. And in their roundup of the century of the top 100 albums of all time, they had it at number 35.
Wow. Wow. That's
and that
great.
Album is not even out in the United States.
Is it available through internet, or can anybody get it?
Yes, you can get it via the Pro Vogue website.
Okay, you can get it Pro Vogue, or now can they contact you? What is this? Your website, is it is this lip service? Is that what it is?
My website
we have
is waltertrout.com.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got my own .com now.
did somebody charge you $200,000 for that domain name?
No, man.
Actually, when we first went into this, we tried to get waltertrout.com, and someone had bought it. So we made it waltertroutband.com.
Yeah. Mm.
And then just, 2 months ago, I guess, Marie checked it out, and waltertrout.com
was available.
Back available, so we
Excellent.
Grabbed it.
Well, you know what? That's a beautiful website, too, and it has an awful lot of information. I mean, it has all your tours, where you're going to be, the times, all your records. It's got everything. And the gentleman who put that together, your webmaster, Richard, what's his last?
Richard Boyles.
Richard Boyles, a very nice man.
And he does an amazing job for me on that website.
It's gorgeous. It's really gorgeous.
I cannot praise him enough for the hard work he's put in.
Well, we don't want to give him too much praise now.
Yeah, you don't want it to go to his head in the long run, come out of your pocketbook because of it.
I want you to tell a story of the time that your mother took you backstage to
meet Duke Ellington.
Well, that was a pivotal experience in my life. And, you know, when I was just a kid, I wanted to be like my older brother, and he was a trumpet player, so I was studying the trumpet.
The same one that turned you onto the Paul Butterfield album.
Yes.
Okay.
And he was a trumpet player, and, you know, when it was time for me to learn an instrument, I figured if my brother Ed does it, I want to do it too. So I was studying the trumpet, and in my house I was hearing a lot of big band jazz, especially my dad was just an expert on big band jazz. And for my 10th birthday, my mom took me to see a concert that was Duke Ellington and Tony Bennett.
Oh, wow.
And we went there to the venue in the afternoon, and she knocked on the door, and she said, "Mr. Ellington, it's my son's 10th birthday, and he's an aspiring trumpet player. Would you just say hello?" And Mr. Ellington said, "Hey, bring him in." And they were there hanging out waiting for the show in the afternoon. And I ended up spending almost 3 hours sitting talking with Duke Ellington and the guys in his band. And I, you know, I think when I look back on it, I could, I kind of blew their mind because I was 10 years old and I could do things like I went up to Paul Gonzalez and I said, "You know, I really loved it when you were playing the Newport Jazz Festival and you were doing diminuendo and crescendo in blue, and Philly Joe Jones was beaten on the stage with a newspaper, and you did 27 choruses and you started a riot and they had to stop the show. That was one of my favorite performances
oh,
by
man.
You. And I knew all this stuff through my dad, you know.
Yeah, you had to have blown their mind.
And so they sort of adopted me for the day, and they just hung out with me and talked and showed me different licks on the trumpet and made a big deal out of me. And I was just a little kid, and I was so blown out by their humor and their warmth and their charisma and how they welcomed me that I came out of there really wanting to be a musician.
Mm-hmm. It's marvelous when people take a time to do
yeah.
that. You know, with a kid, it really is, because they certainly don't have to.
Well, yeah. Hasn't that been your experience? I've noticed myself that usually the people that have the most talent, that are really, really talented people, and have gotten to the top of their crop, so to speak, are generally very generous people with kids, with helping out, with being warm and supportive. It tends to be the people that are missing something or a little shy of left that tend to be the snobs that I've, you know, because I, all the greats that I've ever met have been anything but snobby.
Yeah.
But the ones that were just a little shy of that were the ones that had the most arrogance and wouldn't give a 10-year-old the time of day if their lives depended on it.
Yeah, I you know? Never really have been able to understand attitude in musicians.
I mean,
you should be grateful that you have a gift and that you have talent, and you should be grateful that you have the opportunity to share your gift with people,
mm-hmm.
and not be walking around like you're better than anybody, you know?
Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me how some people really do have their heads up their butts, and my way of looking at it is this, is when your toilet flows over, who would you rather know, a rock star or a plumber? You know?
Yeah.
We all make the world work here, and we're just lucky that our jobs is to be able to put into words and music that which the people that fix our plumbing can't do.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, I could not clean out my pipes, and I certainly don't feel like butchering my own meat and delivering my own mail, so God bless everybody that does.
Yeah. You said mail?
Mail. Speaking
yeah.
of mail, did we say anything about mail?
Nah.
Well, I know that this guy's related to him. Are you planning on
I'd like
up
to.
The mail?
Yeah, I'd like
cool.
to have one life to live here.
All right. Well, so we can get it.
Here it comes.
John Mail, One Life to Live.
One Life to Live. John Mayall's Blues Breakers featuring Mr. Walter Trout. I almost got that second one in there.
Well, I almost got a twofer there, huh?
This is Life in the Jungle album, right? And when was this done, Walter?
Well, what that is I did three albums with John. And when I was in John's band, Mr. Coco Montoya was the other lead guitarist. And what this company here, Charlie, they've taken all the songs that I played lead on and they've made a compilation. And they've called it Life in the Jungle after a song that I wrote that was the title of my first album.
I wonder why John also recorded. I wonder why they would make a compilation of all your stuff onto one. I mean, because obviously you're very large in Europe. And Charlie is a big record company in Europe, right?
Yeah, it's a major kind of blues label.
It's an excellent label.
Yeah.
And this has got, I mean, you're playing on all these, obviously. But that one's a killer.
Well, you see, you can see it says John Mayall's Blues Breakers featuring Walter Trout. And they just decided to, in Europe, to just kind of play on the success I've been having. But that one is actually out in America. You can get that at Tower Records or anywhere.
Yeah, and again, they can get your entire discography through the WalterTroutBand.com website?
If they go on the website, there'll be a link to Pro Vogue.
Okay.
And they can link up with Pro Vogue.
Cool. Yeah.
And they can get, the Silver Tone's not on there, huh?
Silver Tone's not on there, no.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to find that one, you're going to have to go look in stores. It's still out there, though.
Now, listen, you play kind of a bastard guitar, and you love it. That Fender, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell everybody about that. What's it called? A three something?
Basically, it's the kind of Stratocaster that if you're a collector of Stratocasters, you're supposed to hate this. It's an early 70s Strat with a three-bolt neck and the bullet truss rod and all the stuff that you're supposed to hate. And I bought it new off the shelf 27 years ago. And I just went into a store and pulled it down off the shelf and started playing it, and it realized this is my guitar.
It was yours.
And I've played that thing pretty much every day for 27 years. And
you typically run it through a boogie?
Yeah, boogie. A lot of the recordings I've done, I'll use either a boogie or I'll use a Fender Super Reverb.
Mm-hmm.
But that guitar, even though the collectors say it's not a good one, I would not take $1 million for it because after playing it every day for 27 years, it's got my spirit in it,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Have you had to have it refretted or
it's been
rebridged?
It's been refretted probably 10 times.
Yeah, I can imagine the way you play, sure.
Well, the stature of a musician is known by his endorsements.
Uh-oh.
And you've got a whole page full
impressive
of them.
Impressive list and by some impressive
absolutely
manufacturers.
Absolutely. Fender treats you good.
Yeah, they
send you a bunch of stuff that you don't play.
I just play that old Strat, man. You know,
what do you carry on stage as an alternate guitar in case you break a string?
My roadie has a Strat
uh-huh.
that he brings along, and if I break a string, he changes the string.
Yeah.
Also, I have to say, in Europe, though, see, I have a whole set of backline I leave over there because I'm there so much.
Right.
And I've been given some guitars by a company called Eden House.
Huh.
Wow.
It's a guitar builder in California here whose name is Bernie Hefner,
mm-hmm.
and he makes beautiful guitars,
mm-hmm.
and I use his guitars in Europe, both for different open tuning stuff and if I break a string.
You do Washburn too, huh?
Yeah, I use a Washburn acoustic on stage, but I haven't, on this whole last tour, I didn't do any acoustic. I think on my upcoming tour, I'm going to go back to doing some.
Yeah.
Do Marie and the kids go with you on tour?
Sometimes. You know, Marie is from Denmark, and her family still lives there. So our kids, like my son Jonathan, who's 6, has been to Europe like 7 or 8 times already.
Wow.
And they'll go over and stay with her mom, and then when I show up in Denmark, they'll travel around with
mm-hmm.
us. And
mm-hmm.
Jonathan has lived in London. He's lived in Denmark. He's lived in Huntington Beach. He's been all over Holland.
Would you say that Huntington Beach is your home port? Or, I mean, this is like where your home is? Or would you consider London or Europe?
No, Huntington Beach is my home and has been for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've lived there since I moved here from New Jersey in 73. Mm-hmm. And there's a little club there called Perks. Mm-hmm. Which is a little bar at the beach. And when I was playing with all those people like Hooker and Big Mama Thornton and Mayall and Canned Heat and whoever else, Lowell Fulsom, whenever I was at home, I would go down to this bar and jam with my friends. Mm-hmm. And that became the Walter Trout Band.
Mm-hmm.
And I still play at that bar. I'm going to be there in a few weeks. On the 25th and 26th of this month, I'm going to be back and playing for the locals. And the one thing I have to say, when I was unknown through the rest of America, if you go to Main Street in Huntington Beach, California, I'm a superstar because I've been playing in that room. All the locals come down there every night, and it's just a party. It's like playing in my living room to my friends.
Well, you don't have to go that far. You're a superstar right here.
Absolutely, on BluePower.com, and we love you. I have always loved you, and I think I met Walter, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And when I was with Cashbox Magazine.
Yeah.
And we've been friends ever since, and I'm so proud to have you here because... you're going to be a major guy in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And we're
going
to do all we can to help along.
Heads up,
the way.
Everybody. Walter Trout is coming, and he deserves to be heard.
Absolutely. You said you did bring a little piece of that live, the new live album, right?
No.
I thought I did, but
you didn't.
We didn't.
Oh, my goodness. Well, but I do have some live stuff here.
Yeah.
But we were talking earlier about your session with Canned Heat.
Mm-hmm.
And... when was this album done?
That was done in, I believe it was 81, and that was at a that's a live album we did on a tour of Australia. And that was back definitely before I got clean and sober 13 years ago.
Okay.
So my playing on here...
reflects a different...
a different state of consciousness, you know.
Well, who all was in the band at that time?
Fito De La Parra, the drummer, who's been there all along.
Yeah.
On bass, we had Ernie Rodriguez. I don't know what's become of him.
Yeah.
On the other guitarist was Mike Halby, who recently made an album with David Hidalgo of Los Lobos. Mm. They made an album, I think, called Hound Dog.
Yeah.
And on harmonica, we had Ricky Kellogg, who came out of the Elvin Bishop Band.
Yeah.
And then me.
And you.
And I was playing lead guitar at the time. And this is a cut we did.
Yeah.
We'd like to do a song for you that was a hit record for the band in 1970. We'd like to dedicate it to the late Bob DeBaer Height. It's been referred to as the Hit the National Anthem. It's called Let's Work Together.
Done. Who did the backgrounds on that?
That was some singers in Memphis, Tennessee, who in the 60s were known as the Mad Lads, and they had a few hits. They were a vocal group on Stax Records, and then singing with them was a lady named Jackie Johnson, who's released her own Christian album.
Mm-hmm.
And
sounds great.
They're basically studio singers now.
Yeah.
One of them, William Brown, besides being in the Mad Lads, was one of the engineers at the old Stax Vault Records, and he engineered a lot of the Otis Redding and Sam and Dave sessions.
Old Soulsville Studios?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a great room. Who wrote that song?
I did.
Man, that's gorgeous.
And
that really is.
That was, the story behind that is, it's a little tough for me to get through this one. I have a friend in England who's a great portrait painter. He just did the official leaving office portrait of Nelson Mandela, and he's getting ready to do one of the Queen Mother of England. And he's a great artist. And a few years back, he and his wife lost their little 3-year-old daughter tragically, giving her a slice of orange at the breakfast table, and she choked to death.
Oh, man.
And he asked me if I could write a song for her, and I said, you know, I really don't know how to do it. This is pretty heavy for me to do. And I actually prayed about it, and the night that I prayed about it, I had a dream that this artist and his wife were standing in a field holding hands, watching a butterfly and realizing it was the soul of their daughter flying away to God. So I wrote the song that day about the dream.
That's
and that was sort of my gift to them.
And in the same way that they're commissioned artists to Nelson Mandela and the Queen, you were a commissioned artist to God to help comfort them.
And it was a tough song to get through. I could only sing that one in the studio once. I basically sang it, had a breakdown, and told Jim Gaines, the producer, that's the vocal.
That's it?
I can't sing it anymore.
Yeah. You couldn't have sung it any better.
And I can't do it live either.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like tears coming down while I was singing that song, you know. Mm.
Well, it's a beautiful song, Walter.
Thank you.
And I hate to say it, but our time is up.
Yeah.
And I told you it'd be over too soon.
Yeah.
But listen, we're so proud to have you. And thank you so much, Marie, for bringing it. And bearing the traffic, because it's horrible. But this is BluePower.com, and we want to thank everybody for listening. We got a lot of fans, and thank you for your support, for your email, and for all of your kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeanette, you about ready to pump that theme? All right, run it on.
We'd also like to take this opportunity to thank Music Musicians Institute of Hollywood, California, for allowing us to do our shows here. We'd like to thank our marketing guy, David Kimmelman. We'd like to thank Mark Toth.
Right, Mike Toth.
Mike Toth. God, I keep doing that.
David took notes for us today.
All right.
Yeah, he was the secretary, so I didn't foul it up. And once again, thank you to Mr. Walter Trout, his beautiful wife, Marie.
Thank you, Walter. Marie.
Thank you for having me. I had a great
time.
Come
back again.
Thank you so much.
Come back again.
A major talent, and look out because he's going to be hitting the United States doing a big tour. And if he's in your town,
you better go see him.
Yeah. Absolutely.
In for a real treat.
And thank you so much, Jeannie, for being here.
Well, thank you too, John. I'd hate to do this by myself.
Ain't that the truth?
thank you.
This is BluePower.com. We're signing off for tonight. And I love you, Jeannie.
I love you too, John R. And take care, everybody. God bless.
Absolutely. God bless you all.